I am such a firm believer that God is at work in each and every person in this congregation, whether it's the smallest 1-year-old to 90. And we need to hear the voices of everyone here, including our young adults. And so I am grateful that Maria is willing to share with us this morning. Maria, may the Holy Spirit be with you in a special way as you share with us. I'm going to be reading the scripture passages that Maria asked to have read this morning. The first one is from Psalm 94. O Lord, you God of vengeance, you God of vengeance, shine forth. Rise up, O judge of the earth. Give to the proud what they deserve. O Lord, how long shall the wicked, how long shall the wicked exalt? They pour out their arrogant words, all the evildoers boast. They crush your people, O Lord, and afflict your heritage. They kill the widow and the stranger. They murder the orphan. And they say, the Lord does not see. The God of Jacob does not perceive. Understand, O dullest of the people, fools, when will you be wise? He who planted the ear, does he not hear? He who formed the eye, does he not see? He who disciplines the nations, he who teaches knowledge to humankind, does he not chastise? The Lord knows our thoughts, that they are but an empty breath. Happy are those whom you discipline, O Lord, and whom you teach out of your law, giving them respite from days of trouble until a pit is dug for the wicked. For the Lord will not forsake his people. He will not abandon his heritage. For justice will return to the righteous, and all the upright in heart will follow it. Who rises up for me against the wicked? Who stands up for me against evildoers? If the Lord had not been my help, my soul would soon have lived in the land of silence. When I thought my foot is slipping, your steadfast love, O Lord, held me up. When the cares of my heart are many, your consolations cheer my soul. Can wicked rulers be allied with you? Those who contrive mischief by statute? They band together against the life of the righteous and condemn the innocent to death. But the Lord has become my stronghold, and my God, the rock of my refuge. He will repay them for their iniquity and wipe them out for their wickedness. The Lord our God will wipe them out. And 2 Timothy 1:7. For God did not give us a spirit of cowardice, but rather a spirit of power and of love and of self-discipline. Maria, bless you as you share with us this morning.
Okay, good morning, everybody. As Randy said, my name is Maria. I'm going to be sharing with you guys today. On December 8th, 1997, Dave and Shelby Swartley anxiously boarded the plane to head to Bolivia to adopt Maria and Rebecca. Oh wait, wrong story, guys. I'm talking about the trip that I went on last summer, not the one that they went on 20-some years ago. But I guess you can say that's where it all started. As I was thinking about preparing today, I was looking through a bunch of pictures and thinking about the experience that I had last summer. We had gotten together as a group when we were in school last fall, and a lot of us did a lot of reflecting on a lot of different things. So when Randy asked me to share it, I was like, sure, I would love to talk about the trip one more time. But then I was also thinking about how the trip changed me and how God was involved with all of this. And so I came up with a title for today, Gone in Vulnerability. I am a very, I guess you could say maybe non-vulnerable person. I really do not like to go outside of my comfort zone at all. So going on this trip was a big step out of my comfort zone. My dad at one point, I think, was actually afraid I wasn't going to get on the plane. I did, and I am so glad that I did. There was 13 of us on this trip, 13 students. And then 2 leaders and their 1 son, so 16 in all. I did not know anybody else who was on this trip. I had a conversation with one of the girls a couple weeks before school ended, but that was it. So besides going out of the country without any of my family, I was also heading out of the country without any real friends, without knowing anybody. You could say I was pretty scared, but I was also excited at the same time. So then when I was thinking about this word vulnerability, I came up with a few questions. First one, what does it mean to be vulnerable? What does vulnerability look like? And does God and vulnerability go together? So we'll start with the first one. What does vulnerability look like? We'll go back to my parents for a little bit. That, I think, is a good picture of vulnerability. Might be a little bit hard to see, but on the upper right-hand corner, that is right before they left to go to the airport to make the long trip to Bolivia to get me and my sister. I've talked with them several times and always asked, like, how were you guys feeling? Were you, like, scared and nervous? My dad had no idea what he was getting himself into. The same as my mother. And on good days, he'll say it was the best decision on his life. The other days, he might say, eh, it was an okay experience. We'll see how he's feeling today. And my grandparents were along at the airport as well. And then again, you can see my dad's emotions going through at the bottom picture. Head in his hands, who knows what he's thinking at that exact moment. You could probably ask him about that later. So yeah, when I first thought of that, I was thinking about it, and that was the picture that came to mind. What does vulnerability look like? I think it's anything where you look scared, you look anxious. Sometimes you can't verbally speak it, but your body language shows it. For me, whenever I'm in a vulnerable situation, I might not always express it. I may act cool on the outside. But my body will react in a different way. And I've had to learn to deal with this over the past number of years. It actually showed up the first time we went to Bolivia as a family. Just did not start feeling well the one evening. Right below my rib cage, my stomach, it just felt something was in there grabbing all my guts. And let me tell you, it's not a good feeling at all. And so that's when I first got faced with, you know, I guess how vulnerable of a person I am and how much I do not like change. So over the years, that's been a challenge for me. How do I get past that? When I start feeling like that, how do I bring myself to the presence and really just, you know, say, hey, it's okay. This is a new experience, but we're going to get through it. And most likely, it's going to be a good one at that. And then, so what does it... So that's how does it look to be vulnerable? We went through what does it mean to be vulnerable. And so then how does God and vulnerability work together? I was thinking about that one a lot. And I think God calls us to be vulnerable in different situations, whether that be sharing his word with other people who maybe are not believers, you know, going out of your comfort zone, like going to a different country, stepping out of your comfort zone. And I think God calls us to do that. And when we do that, we're never alone, even though sometimes it does feel like maybe he's not there. But if we look hard enough, sure enough, you can always find him there. So this is the group that I traveled with. Again, like I said, there was 13 students. Brian and Linda were our leaders, and their son Lane was also on the trip as well. This was the first picture we actually all took together. So the first stop was in Santa Cruz, Bolivia. That's where we flew into. And we connected with the MCC organization that was down there. So on our first full day there, we kind of got an introduction, and they snapped this picture really quickly before we went in depth. So that's all of us at the beginning. And we've had, even in the short 3 weeks that we were there, we experienced a lot of different things. So as I go through the presentation, I picked out some of the key things that I thought stood out the most. To me in general, and I think some of my travel companions would agree with that. But to give a little bit more of introduction, EMU does a cross-cultural program, as Micah and Madeline already explained. And this one is one that does not happen every year, like the Middle East or anything like that. This, I think the last trip that they did was 7 to 8 years ago. So it's all about timing. I totally believe that. It was God's timing that this trip just happened to be there when I was there. As some of you guys do know, I went to EMU for my first full year, and then afterwards I was kind of struggling. I was like, should I go back? Like, what do I want to do? Do I want to move closer to home? I wasn't really sure what I was doing. So that fall, I worked some and looked at other schools as well. As it came to be, I went back to EMU that January and haven't regretted my decision once. But definitely the Bolivia Cross Culture, I think, was one of the pulls to get me to go back. Before I started my freshman year, we went on campus the one day just to kind of get an introduction to the school, and I was looking at one of the dorms and everything like that, and they had a list of cross-culturals that they were offering. And I'll be honest, that was one thing that I wasn't really sure if I wanted to do. I was like, I don't really know if I want to go out of the country for a whole semester, even for a couple weeks. And I was kind of looking at all the countries, and I was like, there's none that I really feel drawn to. And as I got down the list, I saw for 2017, for the summer, I saw Bolivia. And I was like, whoa, that's really cool. And I had been there a couple of times before, two times actually previously. And I thought, wouldn't that be so cool if I could get the nerves up to sign up for this trip, to go through the process and actually get myself on the plane and to go on the trip? It seemed like a really far-fetched idea at the time. I told myself, you know what, we'll see where I am when that trip comes around. We'll see if I'm even on it. I went on it. I went through the whole entire process. My dad actually took a couple of trips down in the fall when I wasn't actually attending the school to go to the first meetings, the second meetings, the third meetings to get my interview. So thank you so much for doing that. And though I was really nervous, I was also excited at the same time. So this is one stop that we made in Santa Cruz. It is a children's home. As you can see on the side, it says Talitakumi. And we spent probably about a full day there, maybe half a day. And it was nothing what we expected it to be like. We were thinking, oh, great, we're going to go play with the kids. We're going to just spend some one-on-one time with them, you know, really get to know them. Instead, they actually put us to work. Some people, you guys can see that they did the mosaic. That was all done by hand. Different volunteers came in and actually worked on that. In the inside, and you guys will see pictures of that later when I do the PowerPoint. So some of us split into groups, and we're finishing the mosaic in the inside. And then the other group, which I was in, they actually took like old sewer tops, you know, big cement things that were really heavy, took about, you know, 2 to 3 people to move. And they already had done mosaics on top, but they were actually planning to do a path out of them. So we were working, digging holes deep enough and then filling in the dirt around it to start this path. This was an eye-opening experience, I think, for a lot of them. A lot of the students who were on the trip had, one, never been on an airplane before. Two, this was their first time out of the country. So talk about some cultural shock. For me, I had already been to Peru and Guatemala and Bolivia. So I was used to the traveling. I was used to what these countries look like. So at the end of the day, we always like to gather together and meet as a group and talk about, you know, what did God show you today? What were you struggling with? What amazed you? Whatever we wanted to share. Is what we would share for that day. A lot of them struggled with visiting this orphanage because a lot of them had never been to an orphanage. I have a couple of times, and I think in every single place that I've been so far, I've been to at least one orphanage, and obviously that is my background. That's where I came from. That's where I lived for the first couple of months of my life. So it was very interesting to hear what they thought. So this could be something that I was like, eh, it's no big deal. I've done this. I've been here before. You don't think about it. But as I heard my fellow students sharing, it got me thinking, and I put myself in their shoes and was like, wow, can you imagine going there for the first time and, you know, hearing these kids' stories? Because it's not easy, I'll tell you that. It's not easy. It's really rough. But I guess I don't want to say I've become numb to it, but I think sometimes I've accepted it so much that sometimes I don't always react to it. So it was fresh to see their raw reactions on this, and so that taught me to look at a new perspective. The next city that we were in was Cochabamba, and there was a couple of things that we did here that was very impactful. So we did stay with host families that whole entire week. And the first week, our group actually became really close. With 13 people, you don't have a lot of room to kind of go off and do your own thing or to really, you know, get all groupy, which was really nice. So all of us pretty much did everything together. There were times when some of us would split up and do our own thing, but for the most part, all of us became really close on the trip, very comfortable with each other, which was a real blessing. Especially for me, as I slowly started opening up to people and, you know, felt really comfortable. Me and my dad started emailing back and forth pretty much every day, and he was like, wow, you seem like you're having a great time. There was no, oh my gosh, I can't wait to come home, or, oh, this has been so hard. It was just one thing after another that was really positive. And I think actually for the first week and a half to 2 weeks, I didn't have any connection with them whatsoever, and I was fine. I was doing great. So the bottom picture is with all of our host families. We split into groups of two. There was one group of three, which I was in. So I was with two other girls and a host family. That in itself was kind of challenging too, because the first week we all got really close to each other. And the first night that we got dropped off and were sleeping at our host family's house, me and another girl, Taylor, were just kind of sitting on our bed reflecting, and she goes, I really miss the group. I wonder what they're doing. And it's just silent. All of a sudden, both of us, we just start crying. And Karen's like, what are you guys doing? She was the other girl in the house. And we're like, we miss our group. Like, we want to be back with them. It was fine. And the next day, we were doing Spanish lessons as well for that whole week. So we were there, I think, from like 8 to 12 in the morning, doing two different groups. And then the afternoon, we would usually have a speaker come in, or we would go out into the community and do something else. So that was a big stepping point as well, just realizing how close that we'd gotten. Every morning we were always excited to see each other, which was really fun too. And then the other thing that we did was we went to an organization called Vida y Esperanza. It was a program for young men who were at risk on the street. And this could be anywhere from drugs, gambling, anything like that. This was a place that was started for them. And it actually was like an equestrian place as well, so they did have a lot of horses. And some of the way that the boys supported themselves or the organization was by giving horseback riding lessons to the outside community. And so you can see in the right-hand picture, one of the boys in the program, he was riding horse, and oh my word, you should have seen some of them. They went bareback, and they were just racing around the small little arena that they had, just flying, and it was really fun to see. And of course, all of us got opportunities to ride horses as well, under their guidance, which was quite an experience as well. Some of the boys did share some of their testimonies, which was very interesting. And I think a lot of us had fun. We also did play soccer with them, and they beat us so badly. It was actually really embarrassing. But we had a lot of fun. But that was another really eye-opening experience, because when you hear their stories, that's just raw emotion. It's truth. That's not something you hear in everyday life. So it was a good reminder for us that people all around the world are experiencing different things, and they all have their own stories to tell. And then the last city that we were in, my hometown, was La Paz. It does have one of the highest altitudes, so that was kind of the goal of the trip as well. We kind of started in the lowlands and slowly went up just to kind of get adjusted to the altitude. And even just in which the areas in which we're staying were very different. Santa Cruz is very green, in the area that we were in, just very open. The city's big, but La Paz is just this huge city. It's built in a bowl, so the airport's at top, and when you go down, it's a great view. You kind of circle down around into the city. Not a lot of green growing unless you go farther out. So even culture there was a little bit different from the different other cities that we had been to. This was a new experience as well. And the one thing I did enjoy about this trip is I've enjoyed the other trips that I've made to Bolivia previous years. But the one that I really liked about this program is they really tried to take us into like every different, opportunity that they could get their hands on to put us in. The other times that I've been to Bolivia, it's very more touristy. I mean, you still get to see a lot of the sights, but we went from, you know, host families, so like actual families, and most of them were actually, you know, pretty well off, so it wasn't like we were living in, you know, bad conditions or anything like that. And then we went to, when we were in La Paz, we went out to Lake Titicaca to some of these rural farms, and they live a completely different life. So that was also a very eye-opening experience. So the guy on the left-hand side holding one of the wooden instruments, we went out to his place the one day. He had this big property, which will also be shown in the slideshow later on. And he kind of just talked about his background, kind of what families went through around in the area. And again, then we split up into different groups, about 3 to 4 of us, and went to some of the different families. And the families there showed us, you know, how they farmed. They showed us their animals. They gave us food, mostly consisting of potatoes. And then I think some of them even went out on their little boats that they had and got a little boat ride around Lake Titicaca. So just seeing that as well, and as some of you guys know, I do work at Verdant View Farm. So for me, that interest was a little bit different as well, because then I got to see how they would farm in a different country compared to how we farm here in the United States. So I was kind of drawn to that. And then the picture on the far left, with one of the leaders, Brian, he was in my group, and the guy over there, that's, the guy that my group went to, and we got to see his farm as well. He was very open. They shared their food with us, and we talked to them the best that we could, to communicate and just talk about, his life. And then something that really surprised me, I guess, or really sticks out to me when I think about this trip to Bolivia, is learning about the Afro-Bolivians, so African-Americans / Bolivians. This is something that I had not previously known from our other times going. It's not something that is always talked about. So the woman on the far left with the tan sweater, she's actually an Afro-Bolivian. That is her heritage. The one on the right was one of the translators for us. So the one afternoon, she came into the hostel that we were staying at, and we probably talked for about an hour, but she was talking about the history of Afro-Bolivians and the similarities that I saw, how they were treated compared to how some African-Americans are treated here in the United States, was incredible. You think, you know, in other countries, you know, there is a problem with racism, but I would have to say with Bolivia, there's so many indigenous people, there's so many indigenous groups that I just never thought of Bolivia having a racism problem. But here we were sitting down talking about how Bolivia had racism problems. Afro-Bolivians were discriminated because they were not seen as pure Bolivians because half of their descent was from African Americans. While we were in La Paz, they had this big parade. It was this huge thing. It took up all the streets of La Paz. It was just kind of, you had to wind your way around, sometimes cut in front of the parade when they stop, and it was a whole day affair kind of thing. But she was telling us, the woman who was sharing with us was telling us how in previous years there would actually be floats representing the injustice that was done to the Afro-Bolivians, but it wasn't represented in a way that was like bringing people awareness to the injustice. It was more of making fun of it. And the year that we were actually there, I think I remember her saying that that was the first year that some of them could actually have their own indigenous group, because every indigenous group would have their own little, you know, dresses and kind of showing off their culture and stuff like that, their own dances, their music. And so for that year, some of her people were actually included in the parade, and not a way to be made fun of, but as to show off their heritage for something to them, for them to be proud of, which I thought was really cool. And so that was a very eye-opening experience as well. So throughout all of this, this really pushed me out of my comfort zone, in a lot of different ways. One being just opening up to new people, getting to know new people, and just, I guess, really talking. I know that a lot of them was always interested. They always asked, they're like, you know, how are you, like, feeling? Like, how do you feel about all this? Because they were well aware that I was adopted from Bolivia, that I had been there a couple of times. So they asked a lot of questions, and I liked the questions that they asked because it made me process more as well. Because I think it could have been something that I could have easily just gone on and be like, yes, I went to Bolivia. It was really great. It was awesome. and kind of just leave it at that. But through the help of the people that I traveled with, it really helped me gain a new perspective, what some other people see that maybe I did not see to start off with. So going forward, how did this affect me in the long run? As some of you guys may know, I am in the social work program at EMU. I am interested in going into adoption after I graduate, hence my background, something I've always been passionate about. It's actually interesting. When I first started at EMU, I actually went in as a teaching major, thinking that I wanted to be teaching maybe a pre-K or kindergarten class. After the first year, though, being in a couple of classrooms, I realized this is not where I want to be. This does not sound fun. And I was talking to the other people who were in my class, and they were just so excited. They were so full of energy. And they're like, oh, my word, I can't wait to I'm a teacher. I can do this and this and this and this. And I was just like, I don't have that same spark inside of me. And so it was time that I found something that I was passionate about. So the end of the year was coming down to a wind, and I was in advanced writing for college-age students. And the last paper that we had to do that year was a research paper of our choosing, preferably in the area in which we were majoring in. And I was like, well, there's nothing about teaching that I really feel totally passionate about. So I was like, I'm just going to do what I always do. I talk about adoption. It's always my fallback. So I write this research paper, have tons of fun with it, get a pretty good grade on it, if I remember correctly. And at the end of the year, we sit there, and we're kind of reflecting about how the paper changed our point of view, how, you know, what our thought experiences were going through writing this paper. And once I was done with the paper, I realized, like, I don't want to be in teaching. I want to be in, like, social work. So by the end of the year, I had dropped the education program, and I enrolled in the social work program there. So then after I took that fall off the following semester, I was back in the social work program that following winter, and it's been great so far. I've made a lot of good friends, and it finally feels like I'm somewhere where I'm putting where my passions are. I'll say that. I know what I want to do with it. I love talking about it. I love when people ask me questions about adoption, whether it be about my experience or just my thoughts on it. I actually just did a presentation in one of my classes about adoptees and about our experiences. And that in itself was really great because I talked with other people on campus who were also adopted. And so we kind of swapped stories back and forth, which was really good. So how Bolivia ties in with that, you guys are aware of the SALT program. This is something that I've kind of been wrestling with for a while. I don't have a complete answer if I'm going to do it or not. I'm still thinking about it. But after I learned that MCC was present in Bolivia, it's just not talked about as much, I got to thinking, like, ooh, like, maybe after college I'll take a year off before I find a job, and maybe I'll do the SALT program and try to get myself to go to Bolivia in an orphanage where I can actually get first-hand experience working with these kids, because in the United States you don't have many opportunities to do that. You can work with the foster care program, which then can lead you into the adoption program, but I really want to be in an orphanage to be with these kids and really just start off where the process really, you know, begins, and I guess also get a connection and understanding about where I came from and what my life would have looked like for the first couple of months. That in itself, I have to be very vulnerable to do that. Again, it would be for a whole year. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I am very much a homebody. You can ask my parents about that. They tried to get us to go to summer camps every single summer, whether it be Camp Hebron or another camp. Me and my sister would not go, even if both of us were going. They told us one time that they prayed before they adopted us that whoever God blessed them with, they would have a real strong connection with. Well, they got their answer to prayer. I just don't think they got it in the way that they thought. I like to think that God has a sense of humor, so I'm sure that every once in a while he smiled when my mom was trying to get us to go to a week-long summer camp, and we said, no, we'd rather stay here with you. but again, I think all things work out. So that's kind of what the future looks like for me. We'll see where it takes me. This trip was really amazing, and I could go on talking about it forever, and there's so many other things that we did on the trip that I didn't mention in the presentation, but I try to pick out the key things, and I think even just with this small presentation that I'm doing, I feel like I've only cut not even half the pie into what we all experienced and what we all felt during this trip. But thank you, Randy, for this opportunity for speaking. So that was just a little glimpse of my trip to Bolivia. I do have a PowerPoint with some pictures. We had thousands of pictures, so putting this PowerPoint together was really hard. I tried to pick out some of the best pictures, and you guys will see some of the pictures in which I was talking about. So I have some pictures of Talitza and Kumi. Pretty much, I think, a picture of all of us on a horse at one point or another. Some pictures of the royal lands, Lake Titicaca, and some other experiences as well. But thank you guys so much, and I hope you guys enjoy the slideshow.